The University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee plays a vital role in shaping the future of Milwaukee and Wisconsin. UWM's diversity, academic excellence, and major public research contribute to the region's economic development and quality of life. Meet the people behind the creativity and discoveries at UWM today. Here's the host of UWM Today, Tom Lujack, Vice Chancellor for University Relations and Communications.
We often hear stories about technology getting in the way of healthy habits. Picture, for example, youngsters playing video games instead of a pickup game of baseball or basketball outside. But a team of researchers at UWM have discovered that technology can also be the key to encouraging wellness. Polly Ryan, associate researcher in the College of Nursing, and Alice Fang Yan, assistant professor in the Zilber School of Public Health, are looking at two different ways to use smartphones and other technology to actually improve wellness. And that's the topic of today's program here at UWM Today. Welcome, ladies. Good to have you both in the studio. And Polly, let's begin with your program. It's called Striving to Be Strong.
And the primary purpose of the program that we're working with is to find better ways to help people make and sustain change throughout their life. We are currently working with osteoporosis prevention in healthy women between the ages of 40 and 60. And it is well known worldwide that in order to prevent osteoporosis, you have to have good nutrition, you have to have good balance, you have to regularly engage in activities that make your bones strong, and you have to be physically active. So we use a cell phone app to help women assess where they are on a regular basis in terms of their nutrition and their balance, and then to provide them very specific ways that they can begin to slowly work their way through some of these programs. So we have pictures, we have videos, we have directions, and the cell phone is a wonderful media to give that to women individually.
Well, and in the busy lives that we all lead, the cell phone is also a constant companion, isn't it?
Some people call that ubiquitous, and it does mean exactly that, is that it's with people all the time. And what we then believe about this is if you have 2 minutes or a half hour, there's something in this program that you can do and focus your attention on for a few minutes. So, yes.
So we've got Striving to Be Strong, which is one of the programs we're going to talk about today. And now we're going to turn over to Alice. Alice is, as we mentioned, in the Zilber School of Public Health. And you're also using technology to push out a message of getting on the move, right?
That's right, Tom. And this 10,000 Steps research study was an innovative text message-based and smartphone-delivered physical activity promotion program. And the goal of this four-week study was to encourage college students to walk 10,000 steps each day and or engage in at least 30 minutes of moderate-level physical activity 5 or more days for a week.
So how does this work with your use of the phone? It sounds like it's a little bit different from what Polly has been doing in terms of their messaging.
So we found that using a smartphone and a text message, other than other applications, would be like a lower cost application. So in this pilot study, we mainly use the text messaging serving as a reminders for participants to log in their steps and also logging online to monitor and enter their steps and physical activity minutes, and also use text messaging as a motivational tool to encourage students to become more active.
So your target audience was students, and Polly, you were working with a more general audience of women?
Women between the ages of 40 and 60 who are healthy.
Okay. So what did both of you learn? Were students and in your case, adult women, Polly, were they receptive to this idea of being bugged or nudged or prodded with the vibrating or the ringing in their pocket?
Well, actually, we're we're just in the middle of our study, and so I don't have all of those answers. But this particular study has been built on years of prior research where we have slowly brought more technology into the lives of women. And the idea for using a smartphone actually came from participants in our last study. They were using handheld computers. We had gone from using websites to putting it in their hands, and we're using handheld computers. And they were actually the people who requested, let's put this someplace where it's with me all the time, where I'm comfortable with it, where it's a piece of equipment I know how to use, and it's not unique or different. So I do believe that leads us, particularly in women between 40 and 60, it's a self-selected group of people who would be interested in this. You know as well as I do, there are people who don't want anything to do with technology, and so this would not be something that would help them particularly to move on. But there's a large group of women who were very interested in trying this and see if it helps.
How about you, Alice? What did you find, or how did you select the students, first of all, to be involved in the study?
And first of all, I think that a lot of people believe that college students as a very vibrant and active group. However, statistics shows that almost 60% of them do not meet the minimum requirement for healthy exercise level. And we also know that the ownership of the cell phone and the young adults using cell phone ownership aged 18 to 29, they text universally. So we found that maybe using the technology such as the smartphone and texting would be a best way to reach them.
Well, and anyone who has a teenage or college age daughter or son, just look at your phone bill and see how many minutes of voice time are used versus messaging, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they literally do live. In fact, I recall when my son went off to college, we couldn't understand why he wasn't returning our calls. We'd leave voice message with him. And finally, a few weeks in, he's told us, I never listened to voice messages. Just text me, Mom and Dad. And I suspect that is still the case universally.
That's true. In a Pew Research study, and the researcher found that the average young adults text over 100, above 100 text messages per day. And in our study, we found that the college student, the UWM college student, they prefer texting than listening to the voice message as your son does.
So, Alice, tell us about the message itself when you are nudging or pushing or prodding that student to get up and be active. What exactly does the text message say? Get off your butt, or gee, it's time to be more physical? How do you frame that message?
We use the social cognitive theories to develop as a construct to develop the text, the content of the text messages, such as we motivate them to be more active and also help them to find ways to conquer the barriers to be active. And also we provide some of the resources such as the environment and free resources that is available for them to go to the gym or try to exercise or join some of the exercise programs. So there are a variety of channels. And we also, in the very beginning, we ask a group of students, they are my research team, to develop these text messages. And before we implement this text messaging program, we has conducted a month user usability test to ask participants, such as the UWM students, to read this text message and share with us how do they think, do they like or dislike these text messages, and the ways to improve that. So after those user-centered focus group studies, we go back to those text messages and revise and rewrite these.
Well, have you found a particular tone in your messaging that works better than others?
Of course, they like the message to be positive And we also found most of the students do not like to be taught what to do.
So it's a prompt, but not a directive, huh?
That's right.
Polly, how about you? Talk about the nature of the messaging that you're sending to this test group of women, 40-plus, who you want to get up and move so that they have healthy bones.
One of the basic tenets or the foundation for this study has been a belief, a theory that we have that in order for people to change their health behaviors, they need the knowledge and the beliefs to do so. They need to be able to learn a process that we call a self-regulation process that actually facilitates very slowly health behavior change, and that they need to do it in a socially rich environment. So you need support. You need influence by people who you respect, and you need support from people who you live with. So our entire app is really a very complex app, and all of my research team keep calling it this complex, multidimensional app because we have these very thick, rich sections where we take the nutrition. And we talk about what's the basic knowledge. Every piece of information that we have in this app is research-based. So we have the knowledge in there. But then we know we have to help people increase their beliefs and their ability to be able to do this. Part of what Alice does from the social cognitive theory, one of the things we do is we work on confidence. And so how can we help these women be more confident about the behaviors that they need to change? We use a lot of storytelling in the app. We use a lot of pictures so that there is a sense of belonging and moving with a group of people who actually exist in the app. We do a lot of personal assessments. We don't do them. The telephone helps the woman at the time that she wants, do her assessment so that she has a really clear idea in her head about where she's at and where she wants to go.
So what I'm hearing is two different approaches. Alice, you have more of a burst of information using texting, which is by its very nature shorter, a little punchier and perhaps pithier. And Alice, Polly, you're talking about this app that is very, very rich in content. Do you find, Polly, that it's difficult to go ahead and get your participants to actually check in and begin using that app as opposed to the interruption that comes with a text message?
We actually include a lot of interruption, the ability to have interruption. We do start kindly and gently with folks. They are encouraged. We tell them all about the app, what we believe about the app, how change is made, and then we set them on an adventure through what we have. We call these gardens that people go into and spend time in. And the activities in there are kind of just compelling and always bring people with. They're short little messages. We've learned how to do what we call app speak. So it's not like you write paragraphs. People would never read that on a phone. So we have shorter messages that we give people with lots of suggestions on, if you like this, here's where else you could go. Or if you've had enough of this, let's get out of here and go somewhere else.
Who initiates the use of the app, though? I mean, are you sending them a text or an email reminding them, tapping them on the shoulder and saying, you know, it might be a good time to check in, which is sort of the prompt system that a text message would bring?
There's lots of ways that it's initiated. We believe very firmly that the woman needs to be able to do this when she's interested and wants to do it. So it's really...
So you're not trying to bug them or push them too hard.
One way we do it is we say, this is up to you. Go anywhere you want in here. Once a woman is in there, she can set prompts that remind her that she wanted to come back in and to look at something later. So we do have... We call them push messages. They go out via a text so that When the woman sets these, they get a message that it's they wanted to come back in here and do this. But because it's a research study, we also have some expectations that women have to use to participate in this research. And so if over a period of time they have failed to do anything, we send them a little message just saying, you know, we anything we can do to help you come back to us. What do you need to get you going again? And there are we have a website that complements the app. And so the use of the website, use of the app itself, both contribute to the woman's use of the research study.
You're listening to UWM Today here on WUWM. So good to have you with us this week. I'm Tom Lujack, and joining us in the studio, two researchers at UWM involved in technology and wellness. We have Polly Ryan from the College of Nursing. She's an associate researcher involved in the Striving to Be Strong app program, and from the Zilber School of Public Health, Alice Fang Yan, an assistant professor who's initiated a project called 10,000 Steps. The latter aimed at college students, and the former, Striving to Be Strong, aimed at women 40-plus who want to make sure they have good, healthy bones so that they don't have issues with osteoporosis down the road. Both of you are involved in these somewhat similar projects, but they are separate. I have to ask, did the two of you know the other was initiating or involved in a technology-driven system to promote healthy living, or how did you discover each other?
I discovered Alice actually with this program. I certainly know of many other researchers who are using technology with health, but I did not personally know Alice until we met through this program.
And how about you, Alice? How did you come upon the idea of using texting to encourage college kids to get up and be active?
As I mentioned earlier, that we found that texting is almost universal among young adults, and also it's a preferred method mood of delivering and communication among those younger user group. So we wanted to try to see how effective the way of communication using text messaging may reach these population. And how does this program affect their physical activity level? So I also discovered Dr. Ryan's excellent work through this program.
So this is great. So this is convening. We're bringing together. This is the program where we have two distinct groups of researchers working with two separate population groups, and you for the first time are really hearing about the work each is doing. So let me ask you this, based on the first part of this program, how do you feel about each other's technology? Do you think, Polly, for example, that texting would be effective with women 40 plus, which is your study group? And then, Alice, I'm going to ask you whether you think that an app would be as useful as texting seems to be with college kids. Let's start with Polly.
I think that if I were going to work with college kids, texting would be fabulous. I think if we were to do that with the age group that we're working with, and particularly women, it is not their preferred method of communication. So we have, all the literature that's available that helps us understand what different demographics are doing with respect to technology. And so we build there. But one of the most important things that Alice talked about is that we don't build the technology. We have some ideas. We take them out to women. We had an advisory group who worked with us the entire time. And they essentially direct us into what people in their demographics, middle-aged women, like. And so so I think the similarity between our work is that it requires great sensitivity to the participant. What is it they want? How is it that you do it? And we both had some similar foundations in in beginning to approach that.
And how about you, Alice? Can you imagine down the road in 10 or 15 or 20 years that the same students that you're studying now using the texting mechanism to push those healthy messages, do you think their behavior might change and ultimately perhaps be more similar to that 40-year-old today who likes the app as opposed to the text?
I believe so. In this studies, we collected the website. In this study, in addition to the text messaging, we also have the website. So we collected information from the website and smartphone usage statistic during the entire intervention period. This will allow us to examine the adherence to treatment, which of users, such as how often they log on to the website and how often and how long they put together the logs, so that in our preliminary results, we found that 95% of the students, the UWM students, use their cell phone at least once a day, and 68% of the users at the end of the study, they responded that they always or usually read the motivational messages. So we think this would be a very preferred way.
Did either of you ever imagine when you were preparing for your careers that you would someday be not only talking about your message of healthy living, how to stay or remain physically active and vital. Did you ever imagine 10 or 15 years ago that a cell phone would be one of the tools that would be central to your research?
I'm a lot older, so I didn't start my career not knowing about cell phones. They weren't in existence. Throughout my career, we have used different media and evaluated the impact of the media on the messages that we've been sending to people. So I began with some of my first studies were looking at, are there differences in how people respond to health messages if we do it in small groups, if we do it in by videos. My dissertation was all about a video. So I've been pushing the edge of technology for a long time. I think it's a very natural complement to a health relationship with our practitioner. It adds. It doesn't take anything away. No, I never imagined a cell phone would be where I am.
But 30 years ago, who would have thought a VHS tape would be around,
right?
You mentioned practitioners. What reaction are you getting from the medical community to these initiatives? Have you had any feedback from physician assistants or nurses or doctors who are caring for these women or college students? Are they receptive to that? Do they think it's a good idea?
They're receptive, but it's like having a different audience. They're very interested in care very much about their patients and what their patients do. But we can't message to the practitioners the same way we message to our participants. Our messages to our participants are in the context of their life. So they make this message personally theirs. When we send messages out to a physician, they have to be abbreviated, short, they have to have data that's associated with them, and that's how they like their messages. So the same information looks very, very different when it's given to our participant as opposed to a physician.
How about you, Alice? Any feedback from the provider community?
We haven't tested any of the messaging among the medical populations. However, we found that it is very important to test the user's preference among the content of the messaging itself before developing any intervention studies. For example, different populations such as the college students, or maybe the patient, the physician, they have different preference for the messages, such as suggested by Dr. Ryan. So the testing before implementing any intervention is important and recommended.
Polly, question for you. You're working with a group of women right now. Are you familiar, or maybe Alice, you, any specific work focused on a male population, on whether or not they are also receptive to using technology as a prod or prompt to do a better job of taking care of themselves?
Oh, absolutely. I think the literature has a number of studies that have focused on men and across different age groups. So I think
I got to be honest. I get an email every month from my health insurer, and they have these really basic tips in it, like when you wash your hands, make sure that you wash all the way up to the elbow. And for whatever reason, that's a complete turnoff to me. It's like, no, I'll wash my hands where they're dirty. I mean, it's something as simple as that. And I've stopped reading them because it's annoying. So maybe that's just me. I'm not sure.
I think this is a great point here, is that one of the things that we believe that we can do with technology is that we can match the message to the preferences of the individual. So we've talked about doing these assessments. We do them frequently, and we match the message to what they believe, what they want to be doing. And so we wouldn't tell you unless you asked about washing up to your elbows.
I'm going to have you talk to my health insurer because clearly they need some help. Going forward, we just got a couple of minutes left, but going forward, where do you see your research going? Continuing to look at how technology is perhaps a good tool for well-being, Alice?
Yes, we plan to. This is a pilot study involving 100 students, and we plan to expand the study to a larger, perhaps the young adult population, and eventually apply to the patient population, which are at the highest risk of type 2 diabetes or cardiovascular disease. And we see using the mobile health technology a brighter future.
And the good news is, you know that students, young college students,
yes,
are not going to stop using their phones or texting.
Mm-hmm.
And how about you, Polly, with your population?
Well, we are in the middle of our research study now, so we're actually recruiting women into the study. I work with a very large team of researchers that consists of physiologists, physicians, information technology people, and I will say that it's hard keeping us on the study because there are so many potential ideas for where this work needs to go, that as we've brought this team science together, it has just multiplied the number of ideas that we have. And our very best ideas come from our participants.
Well, we thank you so much for sharing your insights into technology and well-being. Good luck on the studies. And who knows what kind of technology we'll all be working with down the road that might keep us healthier as you are doing today. Thank you so much. Polly Ryan of the College of Nursing, associate researcher at the college, and Alice Fang Yan, an assistant professor in the Zilber School of Public Health at UWM, our guest on this edition of UWM Today. That's all for this week's program. We'll see you next week at the same time. Take care, everybody. I'm Tom Lujack.
You have been listening to UWM Today, the weekly program where you meet faculty, staff, and students at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee who help make a difference in the lives of people in southeastern Wisconsin through their teaching, research, and community service. To learn more about UWM, go online to uwm.edu.